Greg Kelly Show.
Yeah, the more I think about that lady from upstate New York, the angrier I get, and she needs to be terminated immediately. I can't stand it. And that goes for you, Dave, in Westchester. This has nothing to do with her soul. This has to do with her secular job, and she's lost all moral authority. She can't do that job anymore. Anybody who gets pulled over by any cop can now just say, I'm going to blow it off. I'm going to keep driving, just like the district attorney did. And you can't get around that. And listen to one more time. This is a Dorley is her name. Sandra Dorley. And she says, look at all the stuff that she's doing. Like she gets to decide. I don't like that either. I don't like that she's in charge of her own punishment, right? No. No, this is like you tell the people, what should I do? Or I don't know. There's something about this I don't like. Take it away, Karen.
Last Monday, I failed you and the standards that I hold myself to. And for that, I am so sorry. What I did was wrong, no excuses. I take full responsibility for my actions. I fell short of the values I've held for my entire 33-year career. I didn't treat this officer with the respect that he deserved. All police officers deserve respect. I am truly and sincerely sorry. I had just come from work. I was dealing with three homicides that occurred over the weekend.
Hey, why the hell did you become a DA if you don't want to deal with homicides? It's also known as work. Don't give me that. You see, she's dishonest. She's screwing around with us. Oh, she's a traumatized woman because she has to deal with homicides. Hey, you're a medium-sized, you're a big city prosecutor. You see, I knew it, James Flippin. She's deceptive, right? You see it right there?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to allude to whatever cases you're investigating. That's like you said, that's what you do for a living.
These are grizzled people, right? They've seen it. They've seen it all. They know it. You know, they don't get frazzled. She's trying to pretend that she's frazzled. All right, keep going. I didn't hear that the first time. Now that I hear that, I'm like, let me just keep going, please. Diego.
That day, I made this officer's job harder. To the community, I owe you full transparency. Here's what I'm doing to hold myself accountable.
See, I don't like First, that. Hold myself accountable. Everybody, when you make a mistake and you're in trouble, you got to be in trouble with somebody. You know what I mean? Everybody should have a boss. I don't like that she's going to hold herself accountable. I've heard enough. Get her on the phone. I demand her resignation immediately. And that goes for, what's her name? Kristi Noem can be the governor for the rest of, for all the time that she wants. But she's crummy. Hey, James Flippin, I'm glad you're here. Did you see the story in the Post today, this weekend, about Karine Jean-Pierre, this press secretary?
You mean how the White House sort of like tried to get her out a few months ago or something like that?
Instead of bringing her in to HR and saying, you know what, you're not cutting it anymore. We've given you three warnings. Goodbye. They had this whole like, maybe Jesse Jackson could talk to her and encourage her to move on to other opportunities. But because she is a black gay immigrant woman, well, they seem to know that you can't mess with that. Apparently, the white chief of staff is very intimidated by that. And granted, when it comes to Karine Jean-Pierre, she shows up at the podium the very first day at work. You're the brand new White House press secretary. And I think she's looking for a date. Quite frankly, go ahead.
Before I do that, I just want to say a few words about how honored I am to be here with all of you today in this role, in this room, standing behind this podium. I am obviously acutely aware that my presence at this podium represents a few firsts. I am a black gay immigrant woman, the first of all three of those to hold this position. I would not be here today if it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me. I stand on their shoulders. If it were not for generations of barrier-breaking people before me, I would not be here. But I benefit from their sacrifices. I have learned from their excellence.
Oh, shut up.
And I am forever grateful to them. Representation does matter. You hear us say this often.
All right,
this
you suck at the job, though, and you're no good. You're not good at the job. James Slippin, does being a white gay male have anything to do with you rising to this level here at WABC?
I don't believe it does. No.
We don't even know you're gay half the time.
There's some question whether or not it's true.
And that's true, too. That's true, too. But, you know, it wasn't just a one-off with this one about being a black gay immigrant woman. I've seen video after video. She goes on talk show after talk show. And years before she showed up at the White House, this is what she goes around saying. Go ahead.
Stands this better than President
Biden? No. The other video, the YouTube thing I found. This is good. This is like a little audition tape to make paid speeches and gives you a little teaser about what she talks about. Listen to what you get when you spend $10,000 to book her for your corporate event.
I am everything that Donald Trump hates. I'm a black woman. I'm gay. I am a mom. Both my parents were born in Haiti, and they came here for the American dream. One of the things that I think that's really important is lifting up the voices of our members, of the people who feel very vulnerable.
She said that Donald Trump hates everything about her, black, gay, immigrant woman. You know how many videos and pictures I've seen of Donald Trump with black, gay, immigrant women or black, gay people? I knew it would take me 8 seconds, an eighth of a second to find one.
She also laughingly said mom, like as if he's got some problem with moms.
With moms. Black gay immigrant woman. No, I mean, I've seen him with all kinds of black gay people and also white gay people and everybody. It doesn't matter with Donald Trump. And I got a list in my head. He's been to events with Martina Navratilova, famously gay and an immigrant. Oh, but then again, she's not black. All right. Maybe. Let's see here. Who else? Naomi Campbell. They went on dates, Donald Trump and Naomi Campbell. She is black and she's an immigrant. Oops, I don't know if she's gay. She's a model. She might be bi, quite frankly. Okay, let's see here. Andre Leon Talley. Remember that guy with the big blanket? He's a fashion guy. Anyway, he's big. He's black.
Oh, okay.
He's definitely gay. Oh, sorry. No, he's not. He's actually from North Carolina.
Oh.
Well, maybe she has a point after all. Of course she doesn't. It's disgusting. And she goes around talking about her sexuality and her status and all this stuff. She should have been focusing on the job because I'm telling you, the effort to get her out, and this was leaked. They want, now that she won't leave on her own accord, they want her gone. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're mm-hmm. they're trying to embarrass her out the door. So,
yeah, I mean, when you read that New York Post write-up of the first, you know, chronicling the effort to get rid of her, they said she's known for kind of just going down to the binder and reading some canned answer. The best press secretaries, I feel like, even if they're giving you the BS, they say it in a more engaging way. You know, they maintain eye contact. They kind of look better on TV saying it, that type of thing. She's just always kind of like, well, you know, we're saying this.
That's true. She's a mess. She's a total mess. And she's, I think, looking for dates. Why else would you remind everybody all the time that you're gay? Do I go around saying I'm straight all the time? I mean, I'm married, but, you know, I'm not fanatical about it, so I'm only kidding. I mean, you know.
No, I do, but at the same time, I guess your point's well-founded, but there's something about her, like, political branding strategy, I guess, that's so important for her to continuously mention that. Now, that's sort of what it comes down to.
One thing I'm going to say, Howard Stern, you know, he mentioned that, let's see here, that when it comes to Joe Biden, you know, he's a great father and he's done all these great things. And I actually don't think I love Howard, but I just, and people, friends disagree. I don't think he was a really good, I mean, look, he may have been the best father in the world, but the children failed. But we know that there are two kids with serious addiction issues, right? At least. And Hunter, you know, doing all the things he's done, I don't think you can claim I was a great father. I just don't think you can. By definition, you can't. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Joe's got to be looking back and saying, maybe I should have done this. Maybe I should have been done that. And it's interesting, in the Bible, it actually alludes to this. To be a leader in the church, you kind of have to have your act squared away. So it says this An overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not addicted to wine or pugnacious, but gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. Now, I know you're saying, well, what about Trump? Well, I'll get to that. Trump has worked a lot of that stuff out. And the whole love of money thing, it's not about money with Trump. He's actually said that out loud, and I totally believe him. It's a way of keeping score, but it's not about money. But here's another. He must be one who manages. This is in Timothy, by the way. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? Question mark. I kind of want to, you know, it's kind of like America in a bit, right? I mean, it's one of the reasons why you don't run for president if your son's a crack addict and doing all kinds of shady deals all over the world. You really kind of, most people would say, yeah, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. I can't put my family through that. But Joe just charged ahead anyway and fooled a lot of people at that silly White House Correspondents' Dinner. Did you watch it?
I saw some of the clips later. I haven't watched one of those, I don't think, in years.
Yeah, they're irrelevant now. Donald Trump hasn't gone to one in years, but you can see how in the tank the press are for Joe Biden. Hey, one other thing. I said that this case against Trump is pretty simple and wrong. There's no case against Trump, but the stuff they're talking about is like really seedy stuff. And even the stuff that works in Trump's favor, like Michael Cohen calling David Pecker, the National Enquirer guy, asking to send photographers to some event where he is, Michael Cohen, so that Trump will see the photographers, get jealous, and treat him better. That came out on Friday. It also came out that Arnold Schwarzenegger had 40 different girls come forward with stories, and the National Enquirer spent $1 million buying those stories. They even bought a story from Rahm Emanuel, He was Obama's chief of staff. He was about to run for mayor of Chicago, and they protected him by buying a story. I can understand all that. Listen to the New York Times, how they sum up. This is the reporter, their main guy on the trial, how he sums up Friday's testimony. All that stuff I just mentioned. Go ahead.
Overall, Friday was really kind of as quiet and calm a day as we've seen in court. David Pecker returned to the stand for a fourth and final day and was cross-examined pretty aggressively by the defense lawyer, Emil Bove. He had a great command of the details of this case, but as he took Pecker into those details, it could be difficult to keep track of what he was trying to say. For those of us who are reporting on this case and who know it reasonably well already, it was still hard to follow. And that makes me imagine that it might have been hard even for some of the jurors. And then finally, David Pecker came down from the stand and we got two new witnesses.
All right, stop for a second. You see how he's just like, that stuff is juicy and totally understandable. Why aren't they reporting that? Why wouldn't they report that? Some of the things about the non-disclosure, or this agreement or this form, you know, like you may have, every trial gets a little bit boring. They're just, now let me hear about Rona Graff and the other one, please.
Two new witnesses, Rona Graff, who was an assistant to Donald Trump back at Trump Organization, and Pierre Farrow, Michael Cohen's banker, when Cohen began to initiate the series of transactions that would lead him to take $130,000 and pay it to Stormy Daniels for her silence about her story of having had sex with Donald Trump, a story that Trump has always denied. When the day in court ended, Trump stood up looking utterly spent. He then turned toward reporters, and we could actually see him adjust his expression, first grimacing and then glaring.
Because he doesn't like you guys.
He likes to do strength as he walked outside. This was a really important week, of course. It was the first week of testimony. David Pecker, as an initial witness, laid out the first half of the prosecution's case, which really concerns what the prosecution has said was a conspiracy to suppress negative stories during the election. As the weeks go on, we'll expect prosecutors to link the conspiracy part of their case with the concealment part of their case, arguing that Trump himself coordinated the disguise of reimbursements to Cohen for the hush money payment, and in doing so, committed 34 felonies.
Wow. Talk about superficial, weak reporting, ignoring stuff that's unpleasant or that does not work out in their favor, that's unpleasant for the prosecution. It's amazing. It's just, David Pecker got up there and said there have been hundreds of thousands of arrangements between the National Enquirer and celebrities over the decades. Donald Trump, that I count one. National Enquirer and Karen McDougal. Donald Trump specifically says you should not pay her. He says it out loud. Pecker admits that he never heard from Donald Trump to buy the story. Never heard. I think that's relevant. I think when you're given a little summary of the day, you got to point that out.
Well, I think it's interesting that you think about like courtroom reporting and you're trying to give the person who's not there a little bit of, you know, color and background about what's going on. So, yeah, the guy says in and of himself, he found some of it confusing, right? The fact pattern back and forth. But the stuff you're talking about, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rahm Emanuel, I mean, that's juicy stuff. The kind of stuff you would think a reporter would want to pass on in the interest of kind of, you know, providing some interesting stuff.
But telling people what the hell is really going on.
Why leave that out? I don't know.
Well, they are one-sided and they want to damage Trump. And it's right there. And it's fake news. When you only give half the news, it's fake. You'll notice I point out Republican, you know what I mean? I point out, I love debunking things, but I don't hide from the allegations. And they do. It's pretty interesting. Be right back. Thanks, James.
Greg Kelly.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
This is the Greg Kelly Show.
All right. Welcome back. I didn't like also at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You know what they were doing? Handing out great big checks for $25,000 to fake news reporters for stories they did say about the police and their botched response to the Uvalde school shooting. Remember that when the cops were just hanging around, washing their hands? I mean, it was such a horrible story. There's something I don't like about that, that they're getting an award for how they covered that story. $25,000. Another Washington Post, they did a big story about the AR-15 rifle and how much damage it does to the human body if you fire a round at a human body. And a lot of gross pictures and diagrams and dead bodies. And each reporter got $25,000 for that story. I thought this was supposed to be a charity thing. I don't know. There's something that's, and there are just too many awards in this world. You got the Peabody, you got the Emmy, you've got the Pulitzer, you've got a million other different awards. And they're always throwing themselves these kinds of things. Granted, I got an award on Friday night. Very grateful to the Metropolitan Republican Club for the Brandeis Warren Award for integrity in journalism. And it was quite an event. It was really nice. But it didn't come with a cash prize. Okay. I think I got a small plaque for my home or office. And that's the way it should be. Nothing more than that. Yes, Bridget. Very quickly.
Hi. You know, I was thinking about that DA and he's not getting penalized. But meanwhile, that cop in Tampa, the chief of police.
Yeah, she was fired just for identifying herself. She was fired. Sorry about that, Bridget. Be right back.
You're listening to the Greg Kelly Show.
Well, the Columbia students, the anti Israel, Jew-hating students up there are right now winning. They took over that whole big chunk of the university. The administrators, the so-called administrators, were a bunch of fools and fraidy cats. Can't figure out a way to get them out of there. They were negotiating it like you negotiate with these people and allowing them to squat and take over. They had a 2 p.m. deadline, you know, move or else. And they haven't moved. So is it time for or else? Maybe not, because these people are, again, weak and weird and woke,
and very much sympathetic to the students and their anti-Semitism. So what will happen? You know what's probably going to happen? They're going to let him stay there. And then something tells me that when the semester was originally supposed to end, like in 2 weeks, May 15th or so, they'll remember about their summer plans. And, you know, it's like, oh, we're not going to be hanging around this school all summer long. What does a silly piece of grass have to do with Gaza anyway? So that could happen. Or Columbia could, you know, just kind of, I don't know, ask the cops for help. And the cops know how to do this. I recommend the cops go in at about 5 a.m. Like I said, 99%. They got problems all over the country. And too many of these administrators, well, they're in a bad spot a little bit because their students are crazy. The faculty is totally nuts. And they're kind of fighting for their jobs at the same time. And if they come off as too hard on these students, and a lot of them are also conflicted and they kind of like the terrorists a little bit. The Columbia University professor was like, I can understand the feelings of Al-Qaeda on 9/11. I understand where they were coming from. Oh, really? This is another reason possibly to not send your children to college. All that money, imagine just using that money to go into business. Hey, what do you need college for anyway? You know, in the olden days, I like saying olden days, you had to go to college because that's where the books were, right? That's where they, having books, that was a very special thing. Well, now books are everywhere. You can get them. You can download anything you want right where you are. You don't need special access. Have you been to a classroom at Columbia University? You know, I was actually a student at Columbia for a day. I did. I applied. I got into their School of International Public Affairs, SIPA, they call it. And I was there for one day. I was very happy I got in because it was competitive. And I get in there and I'm like, I don't want to be in school anymore. After about 4 hours, I got the hell out of there. And that was a big thing because I there was like this 25-year-old teaching assistant using chalk on a chalkboard, and they were explaining algorithms. You had to take a lot of math for this thing too, and I'm not great in math, but I knew I could figure it out. And like that night, I went home and I Googled algorithms. I'm like, oh, this is what she was talking about. I don't need it. Now you could say, well, you need the environment, you need the structure, because you're not going to be Googling algorithms on your own, are you? Well, maybe, maybe not, but I just didn't see, and it was like $80,000 a year, right? So the anti-Israel Columbia students, defiant as a 2 p.m. deadline passes to clear the encampment. We went through this during Occupy Wall Street. Got to move in, got to get them the hell out of there. All right, you know this OnlyFans thing? It's like porn website in a box. Well, they've been spreading pro-Biden propaganda. Listen to this. An OnlyFans creator and TikTok star has claimed she was paid to spread political propaganda for the Biden administration on social media and that she was asked to hide the fact it was advertising. Fada Khalida said she'd been asked to help boost then-Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to her tens of thousands of social media followers after Brown Jackson was nominated to the Supreme Court by President Biden. I was doing full-on political propaganda, the social media personality said during a recent podcast interview. It's funny, I've never heard of this person, but they are, OnlyFans creator, TikTok star, Farah Khalidi. I wonder if she does the porno, right? A lot of this stuff is basically soft porno. Oh, hello, Saul. The last time I noticed you, you were bad-mouthing me on social media. That wasn't very nice. And what do you want?
Who was that, me?
Yeah, you. Don't. Oh, who, me? Who, me?
No,
yes, it was you.
I don't
yeah,
think,
yes,
I don't,
it was. Say you did it.
Say you did it.
You know what you said. Can you remind me? First, you were like, no, it wasn't me. Well, remind me what I said.
I did it.
You know what I'm talking about. You owe me an apology. All right? I get it from the left. I get it from the right. You know what I mean? So you going on Instagram or Twitter, wherever the hell you were doing, you know, you used to call here, you used to badmouth all the other hosts. I didn't like it. Now you do it. I hear you do it sometimes still. I told you I don't like it. And now you're going to social media. Are you a friend of ours or not? Quite frankly, I don't care.
Well, I have to because the other hosts never take our calls.
Hey, Saul, so you know what, Saul. Are you kidding me? Some of these programs sound like a telethon, all right? So, Saul,
I don't think you have learned your lesson. You have been in denial about what you did. You are rude to the employees here at WABC. You become a social media creep and saying all that nasty stuff, and you deny it to me? Sal, I thought you were a man of faith. You are lying. You are lying, and you're being deceptive. So I am very disappointed in you. If you ever want to call back with a full-throated, sincere apology for all of the nasty things that you have done to me and my family, I will I take that back. You didn't bring my family into it. You're lucky on that one. But, Sal, I don't think we have anything else to talk about right now until you're ready to own up to all this stuff. Goodbye. Wow. Yeah, I do remember that. And I remember. I have a memory. You got to admit, right? I remember. And I'm all about forgiving Sal. I would forgive Sal. And I know I'm supposed to forgive, and I do forgive. But if he shows no signs of wanting to repent, and what do I mean by repent? Altering his ways. I used to tell him, you know, every time he calls on, he complains about Sid and something he said. He complains about Curtis and something he said. He complains about Anthony Weiner and something he said. And then he goes on social media and complains about all of us. Well, I don't go that way. Susan, hello.
Hi, Greg. Listen, I heard Joe DeGenova, that great attorney. I've heard him on with you, too. Maybe if you can get him on again. There's been so much about this. This is about the NDA trial that everybody incorrectly calls the hush money trial. That Stormy there, she signed a sworn statement that she did not have sexual relations with Donald Trump. And then she, you know, broke that NDA, and he sued her, and she owes him $300,000. Does he get to bring that up? Does his lawyers get to bring that up? Not that that's even a crime or has anything to do with it.
I think it's going to come up. I thought it came up already in a sidebar conversation. So, no, that's gonna come. A lot of this stuff is side issue, and they're dragging it out because they want to keep Trump where he is in court. But that's going to blow up in their face, too, because he's getting as much media attention as he's ever gotten in his life, probably more. So I don't think that's going to I don't think it's going to work, even though Joe Biden seems to. Let's see here. Cut 18.
It's been a year since I delivered this speech, and my wife, Jill, was with me tonight, was worried how I do. I told her, don't worry, just like riding the bike. She said, that's what I'm worried about. Of course, the 2024 election is in full swing. And yes, age is an issue. I'm a grown man running against a six-year-old.
Where's the laughs? I want to hear there are laughs or boos or groans or whatever. So it doesn't work. It was a bit of a dud overall. And then Colin Jost gets up there, this guy from Staten Island. I mean, then again, he went to Harvard, and I think he forgot all about Staten Island. Cut 16, please.
He voted for you, and the reason that he voted for you is because you're a decent man.
Hey, stop. This is the decent man who denied his grandfather, his granddaughter's existence. As long as we're talking about grandparents here, your grandfather, Colin Jost, at least acknowledged your existence. Remember? Remember that little baby Navy? She didn't even get a Christmas stocking at the Biden White House. What the hell is this kid smoking? I think he actually said he's on cocaine. Keep going.
My grandpa voted for decency, and decency is why we're all here tonight. Decency is how we're able to be here tonight.
What the hell does that mean? Decency?
Decency is how we're able to make jokes about each other, and one of us doesn't go to prison after. We go to the Newsmax after party.
I don't get it. I don't get it. And it's particularly not funny.
The levels of freedom throughout history and even around the world today, this is the exception. This freedom is incredibly rare. And the journalists in this room help protect that freedom. And we cannot ever take that for granted.
Bull S-H-I. You know the rest. We got a country where the FBI is stealing cell phones from journalists. The FBI. The FBI is making lawyers testify against their clients. You guys aren't guardians of democracy. You're perverting it. Every single one of you down there in the fake news at that silly event. Silly, silly. Oh, I went to it once before where George W. Bush, a decent man, actually joked about not being able to find weapons of mass destruction. You know that war that, 10,000 Americans died in and maybe a half a million Iraqis? And he made this great big goofy video about him not being able to find weapons of mass destruction in his office. In his office, like under the chair, under the couch. Not funny, George. And I still remember. It still burns my... Be right back.
Greg Kelly. This is the Greg Kelly Show.
Yeah, so many words over the weekend at that silly dinner about, oh, it's so good to, you know, now we can take a moment and laugh at each other and it's important and, you know, this is a hallmark of democracy. And, you know, implicit throughout the night is the shaming of Donald Trump, and he's in court. And I mean, this is a guy who knows about comedy. I mean, you know, they had the SNL guy, Colin Jost. And I don't know. I just find it amazing that Donald Trump himself has been on that show something like 20 times. He's hosted the show throughout his history. And now at this point, Donald Trump is the threat to democracy. I don't see it that way, and neither do you. Now, this is one of the – back when SNL was great, there's a guy playing Donald Trump, and the premise is they're in Donald Trump's apartment, and they send in the janitor to fix – a leaky faucet, and the janitor is actually the real Donald Trump. All right, so go ahead.
He's here to fix the leak on your solid gold faucet.
Send him in.
This place looks like the Liberace Museum.
Hey, I'm the prince of this city. When you're in my office, you treat me with respect.
Who did your decorating? Saddam Hussein?
I'll have you know this is all very classy stuff. And that painting of the tiger and the woman has got me laid on numerous occasions.
Ooh.
I didn't know gay dudes liked tiger paintings.
Hey, you've crossed the line. I've killed people for less.
Looks like you killed a squirrel to me and put it right on top of your head.
You're one to talk. Your hair looks exactly like mine.
Yeah, except my hair's supposed to look like this. I'm a janitor.
All right, all right. I mean, it's good stuff. It's too bad. It's too bad we're in this moment. It's too bad the media is so corrupt. It's too bad this woke stuff. We could be having so much fun. At least we'll have a little bit of fun. Oh, Barbara standing by. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Yes, what you were just playing is another of what we see going on—an inversion of reality. Because Donald Trump, who's funnier than anybody that I know, you know, now he is not funny. He is, you know, the antithesis of all of our freedoms, and we see more and more chaos. The chaos now with all the demonstrations, the chaos that Cloward and Piven wanted so that we would overthrow our government and we would have a new socialistic government. And to add to that, the redefinition of the term female and male for the purpose of Title IX, so that students in the past who were protected, women were protected by the 1972 passage of Title IX because it said you can't discriminate between men and women when it comes to sports and scholarships and educational activities. Well, last week, the Biden administration's Department of Education redefined that, and they added to that that gender identity cannot be a reason for deciding who can be on which team and get which scholarships and so forth. That gender identity is equivalent with your God-given biological sex, and therefore any education program or activity cannot deny a transgender or a different gendering student. Now, that's a cultural bomb. That's going to create chaos. It already is. The schools don't know what to do. This changes everything with their sports programs, with their scholarship programs, et cetera. It means no separation of restrooms. It means no biological women's locker rooms, housing, et cetera. It all adds to the chaos. And in spite of the fact that 69% of Americans still say they don't believe transgender should play on women's team, the Biden administration doesn't hesitate to put this stuff out there because it doesn't matter whether it's popular or not to them. What matters is that it creates more chaos in every way in America.
Wow. And that Title IX thing, I was reading about it and I want to tackle it. It's basically a decree, right? It doesn't have to be approved legislatively. They just made it happen. Or am I wrong?
They call it a rule, but it's a rule with all the force of law, just like the HHS mandate was a rule with all the force of law. So if you don't adhere to this, if you're a teacher, a school administration, another student, you don't use the right pronouns for a student, or, you know, if you're a teacher, administration, you go against any of these new rules, you can be taken to court. We don't even know what all of the penalties will be. We just know that this goes into effect August 1st of this year.
Man, that is so basically Leah Thompson. Remember Leah? I think his name is Lance, but then he became Leah and was a basically mediocre boy swimmer at the University of Pennsylvania and suddenly became the number one quote unquote female swimmer in the country. We're just going to see that. That's going to be rampant, right? That's going to be everywhere.
That's going to be everywhere. This rule gives legal support to the states and local governments that have already been forcing these transgenders to be allowed on in women's teams. So this gives support to them, and it hurts women. It's going to devastate women's sports. Over the weekend, I wrote a little article about it. So I read about, you know, I spent hours and hours researching this, and there is nothing good that's going to come out of this for anyone. It will be chaotic. Parents, students, administrators, women in sports are all going to be devastated by this. And families whose faith teaches that God created us man and woman, and that those families have the right to educate their children according to their religious beliefs, they will be under religious persecution. They will not be allowed to send their children to school to say or believe such a thing, that there are only two genders and that God determined your gender. No. That will be taken away.
Well, it's an insane moment, and obviously there's going to be a huge issue. We'll make it huge in the election. Thank you so much, Barbara. Where can we find that article?
Well, next week, next Sunday, it'll be on AFFOR.org.
Okay, you let us know when you're... Well, I don't know what you're waiting for. Just put it up on your Facebook. You worked on it all weekend. Anyway, whatever you can do.
Worked on it. You know what? I can do that. I'll tell you tomorrow where I put it. I'll find places to post it.
Yeah. We can't wait until... We can't wait. We just got to put it out. Fight. You know, 15 articles a week, whatever it takes. Thank you, Barbara. I know you're doing everything you can, everything one could possibly do. There they go again, those maniacs on those damn scooters. Do they realize how vulnerable they are on Third Avenue? I mean, just how easy it is to die on one of those scooters? And would it kill one of these bike riders to stop at a red light? It won't, actually. It will save your life. You just insist on going right through. Sandra, I hear you calling all the shows. What's up?
Well, you know, for 234 years, no president was prosecuted for presidential immunity. So Biden, in my opinion, made this decision to weaponize Trump. John Sawyer said to the justices, he gave some examples that I liked. One, he said, should we imprison George Bush for allegedly lying to Congress to induce the war in Iraq? Should we put Obama in prison because he was charged with murder for killing U.S. citizens abroad by drone strikes? And maybe in the future, Biden someday will be charged with, you know, his immigrants coming into the country.
Yeah, so they're playing with fire here. And there has to be a reasonable amount of immunity for President Trump. I think They did a great job last week, and it looks like Trump is going to win again.